Welcome back to Secret Sauce. This is LaToya on the mic again, and I am joined by the doctor.
Hi.
Hey, girl. Welcome back on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know you're one of my loves. Anytime you'd like to come on, you can. So what have you been up to? Tell us a little bit what's going on with you.
I'm getting old.
Girl, bye.
I've been down back issues twice in the last 4 months, and it has been freaking miserable, like bedridden. I'm getting old. I don't like it.
Back injuries are
nice in some ways, but in some ways it is freaking overrated, let me tell you.
What, getting older?
Mm-hmm. I'm getting old. I'm old.
Shut up. You are not.
My boy is about to go off into the Marines. I'm getting old.
Oh, did he decide to go into the Marines?
For now.
Well, you know I have a military background, so that's why I said that. But, best of luck to him, really.
Yeah, if he sticks with it. Yeah,
that's Marines are no joke. I mean, okay, I was in the Air Force, and that was enough. Marines are a step further, so good luck to him, really. Really, yeah. Good luck to him.
But no, other than that, I've just been watching a shit ton of Taiwanese dramas and shows and talking about those with Moji over at TV Movie Mistress. We actually just got through recording a little while ago about some shows we recommended for folks to watch if they wanted to jump off into watching some shows. So, and Chinese and Taiwanese shows, so...
All right, so give me one. Give me one that you recommend for me to watch.
Chinese Nirvana and Fire. You can find it on Drama Fever. You can watch it streaming for free with commercials. And basically, it's a show about a man whose father, best friend were framed. It's a historical drama, mm-hmm. And they were framed for treason and murdered. He survives, but his appearance is drastically changed and his health is drastically weakened. So he reinvents himself as the head of a pugilistic guild and maneuvers his way into the imperial court to, you know, not just exact revenge, but to exonerate, you know, his best friend who was the emperor's son, who the emperor forced to kill himself because he thought he was being treasonous, as well as his father and the 70,000 soldiers who died as a result of being framed.
Oh, that sounds really good.
I've likened the storytelling. If you like Game of Thrones, you'll like this. I mean, it doesn't have dragons, but in terms of the intrigue and the relationships and the balance is really good. It's got I really like shows that have really strong friendships, although I joke that I ship the two main male characters. I'm like, get you a man that looks at you the way these two are looking at each other.
That's so silly.
Kind of like how Gampy be looking at Jefferson.
Oh, right.
But no, they're really just really good friends. Mm-hmm. And even though his good friend is one of the sons of the emperor, he's not as treacherous as the other kids. And he also wants to exonerate his friend who he thinks is dead. Okay. And so he's doing, you know, this man is trying to exonerate his family himself and his friend's brother with the help of his best friend who doesn't know that it's his best friend helping him do it.
Okay. That sounds really interesting.
It is. It was, I didn't think it would be. Like, I started an episode when I'm like, okay. And then towards the end, I was like, oh. And then every episode is like, oh my God. Like, it's emotional. It's really, really good. And then a Taiwanese one that I always recommend. Actually, Bree from Three Fifths watched it too, and she loves it. So that's another recommendation. So that's three of us, me, Moji, and Bree from Three Fifths. We all recommend this one. Is a show called The Fierce Wife. And it's an older show, but it's basically about a woman who invites her cousin to live with her, mm-hmm. her cousin who was in America, and her cousin gets into an affair with her husband in her house.
Oh, wow.
And it's about the fallout of that. So it's really, really powerful show.
Is that The Fierce Wife, like F-I-E-R-C-E wife?
Mm-hmm. That one's on all three platforms. So it's on Amazon, Netflix, Drama Fever.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might start with that one.
Yeah, and it's funny because the Taiwanese shows always say they start off kind of funny, and it's like, oh, I'm laughing, and oh, I'm a little teary eyed. Oh my God, why am I weeping? What happened? What? When did this go south? And how did I miss that it was going to go south? But they tend to be pretty emotionally powerful and all over the place, but they're really good.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about TV since we're on that subject. Mm-hmm. Now, I saw you talk about something called Lost in Space on Netflix.
You don't know? You don't remember Lost in Space from when you were a kid?
Never watched it.
Okay. Never. So Netflix remade Lost in Space, and I haven't finished it, but they remade it for modern day. Lost in Space is the story of a family who gets stranded. And the perils they face while they're stranded. So in the new version, there's the husband's a soldier, the wife's an engineer, the oldest daughter, Judy, they made her black. So they, you know, I don't know if she's from another relationship before the husband and wife got together and had two kids of their own, but she did say, you know, I came along before they got together. Mm-hmm. And then the middle daughter, she's a writer, and the youngest child, the 11-year-old boy, is a scientist. And they encounter this robot who kind of imprints on the little boy and is really working to protect this little boy, even though when he first saw him, he was trying to kill him. Midway through their mission, they were traveling. The way the show on Netflix is set up is it flashes between the past and the present. So we learn how everybody got chosen, how everybody got on the ship, how everybody landed where they landed, you know, what was going on Earth that we're making this trip to the stars, how people are being left behind. You know, you have to qualify, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But the thing about the robot, and it's not even a central story, but it's a part of it. The robot is as they're traveling to this new universe, this robot gets on board and starts like blasting everything, like destroying, killing people. And it turns out it's the robot that imprinted on the little boy. But the family didn't know that until they went back to the robot ship. And the little boy was helping the robot move a piece of the ship while his parents were inside. And when they did that, the boy could see from the robot's point of view everything the robot did on the main ship. So the little boy knows that the robot is the reason that their main ship ran into trouble, but he's trying to keep it a secret because it's like, well, he's good now. He's changed. He won't hurt us. He's been protecting us. He helped save the oldest daughter. He's been helping save the little boy, save the ship, stuff like that. It's really well done. I'm taking a break, though, from it. I'm halfway through because there's this treacherous 53% woman, and she's starting to get on my nerves, so... I finished episode 5. I'll probably go back to it maybe next weekend, but it's really good.
I swore. I thought you were going to say you stop it because the reason why I stopped watching Netflix shows, I'll go through like 3-4s, almost to the end of a Netflix series and be like, all right, I'm going to stop. And then I won't watch the last 2 episodes.
Why?
Like months. Because I don't want it to end.
Oh.
I have it bad. I don't want it to end. Like, for a long time, I did that with Jessica Jones. Stranger Things.
I still haven't seen season 2.
What? It's really good.
I did not bother to watch season 2. I had it in my queue, and I was all hyped, and then it came and went, and I forgot about it.
I'm surprised, because you guys do the Super Tuesday recaps. I thought you guys would have done one for Jessica Jones already.
We didn't do one for Jessica Jones. We did The Punisher.
Mm-hmm. I know, but I thought you guys would have done Jessica Jones is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I think plus 2 because we're doing Supergirl and Black. We were doubling up with Supergirl and Black Lightning.
Yeah.
So it was just like a little too much at one time. And at the time we were finishing up Discovery. So it was just a lot going on.
Yeah. Now, for people that don't listen, I don't know how you're listening to MTR Network and not listening to the Super Tuesday recaps, but the Doctor and Shanna, along with a host of others, do recaps on a variety of shows. So you guys did Black Lightning. You did that with Dee and with...
Parrish, who I do the Star Wars Rebels cast on the Premium Network with.
Right. And then you did Discovery with Chris... and Hiroja and Paris sometimes, right? Like it was split between the two of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, Paris came on later. It was with Delano. So, and then Paris joined us after about midway through. There was an episode that blew his mind. He was like, please let me be on this one. I got to talk to y'all about this. And so he joined us for the back end where Chris proceeded to troll me about my ship. I still have not forgiven him for that.
So, okay, we'll come back to Black Lightning, but it's y'all's fault that I started watching Discovery.
Okay? You mean it's our blessing that you started watching Discovery? You're welcome.
I still can't get over what they did to Tyler. I still can't figure out what they did to Tyler.
It broke my heart. I was devastated. I still am.
Yeah, man. I still think about that. And I can't think of the captain's name, the one that I asked you guys about.
Lorca? Or Giorgio?
No, Lorca. Like, I didn't. Okay. I knew Lorca was not right. I knew there was something wrong with Lorca, but I couldn't figure it out. And then all of you said, keep watching it.
Keep watching. With my deer eating popcorn, keep watching.
Right. Like, to be honest, I'm not a sci-fi person, right? I don't watch a lot of sci-fi. I literally don't care. But I wanted to watch it because of who was, you know, who was at the helm of it. And then the two of you guys kept telling me, and Lance kept telling me how good the show was. So I gave it a shot. And I'm really surprised that I enjoyed it as much as I did. Really.
Do you think you enjoyed it because you were able to see yourself in it? I feel like that's what, as I'm a Star Trek head from way back. Like, I used to watch the original series reruns with my dad. That's how far back I go. Mm-hmm. Like, all of them. I've seen them all. Mm-hmm. But for me, I connected more with this because we had a Black female lead, because we could see us. We could see a variety of us. We could see Black women and Asian men and, you know, African, Nigerian women and gay individuals being allowed to play gay individuals in relationship with other gay individuals, which is just something that almost never happens on network television.
Especially not gay men.
Yes, yes. And the only problem I had with it, and I've got to finish this article. Damn, I have an article that I've been working on, but with my back issues and life issues, I haven't finished it, from AwesomeCon. But Tana Ford, who did a lot of the drawings and artwork for the Silk series, mm-hmm. talked about this during a panel on it was about Discovery and diversity, about that they, you know, unfortunately they went to that well. She and I were actually chatting with another young lady before their panel, and they touched on it in the panel, and we were talking about the fact that we love the show, but we absolutely hated that we got the moment of the gay man, the gay relationship that was together, and then almost because it was unforgivable, they kill off one of them. Yeah. And not just kill them, brutally murder them, almost as a way to lighten the impact that, oh, you saw a gay relationship. The only way we can be forgiven for showing you that is to kill one of them. I feel like that's kind of the trope, because it almost always happens. As much as I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they did it on that show.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. And I love Willow.
Yes, I love Willow and Tara together.
They were so sweet together. But yeah, they did do that. And they did that, like, it was a couple of years ago. They had a couple of different shows that killed off gay characters terribly.
Yeah, I mean, someone had compiled a list mm-hmm. of gay characters over the last, like, 10 or 15 years and how they died. And some of them, they made sense in the story, you know, the kind of show it was. But some of them, I'm like, it's not even that kind of show. Why are we killing this person this way? Why does this person have to die like this? This makes no sense.
Hmm. Yep. But on Discovery, well, he still died. And I still didn't like the way he died. I understood it went with the story. Mm-hmm. Like, it was built well into the story. That is truth to it. But I did hate that they killed him off. And he was the Black one. I didn't like that at all. But as far as why...
Latinx.
Yeah, but as far as why I was able to relate to Discovery, it was because I was able to see myself at the helm. And I was able to see her, you know, doing things that I would do or things I wouldn't, but she looked like me and I could relate to her. And that,
you know,
go ahead.
And you add on to that, we got her growing, and we got to see her grow and change and develop in a way that Star Trek doesn't. I mean, I love the show, but it doesn't always show the growth of a character from one point to the other, from who she was when she was with Giorgio at the beginning to who she was at the very end.
Right.
We saw how her experiences truly shaped who she was. Like, I love Captain Picard, love Will Riker, but they pretty much stayed the same people, same character. There was no growth. They were these static individuals, these static, like, not stereotypes, but these static avatars for these characters.
Yeah. But on this show, you saw her start as someone who was... Like, okay, so did you disagree with what she did in the very beginning? See, that's where I was. I didn't disagree with what she did from the very beginning.
I get why she did it, but she went about it. She is in the military. She did go about it the wrong way.
True. You do have a chain of command, but they would have been even more deader if they didn't listen to her, like... Yeah.
But the other piece of it is this. I didn't like the spin of, oh, this is all her fault. She started the war. I'm like, scapegoat much?
Yeah.
No, she didn't. That's not what happened. They were coming for y'all regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, I always thought that was trash. She did not cause the war. She just didn't run away from war. I feel like that's the role that they were always taking before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I don't know. Piece at any cost, yeah.
Yeah, I thought she was super interesting. I loved her captain. And
George Michael?
Yes.
Yes. Michelle Yeoh. Yes.
Gosh. And
look, that woman is 54, 55. Come through, sis. Do your thing.
Right.
Especially the fight sequences in the back end, her flipping her leg like 180 degrees. I'm like, okay. Okay.
Yeah, if you guys hadn't said that she was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I wouldn't even have remembered.
Really?
Yeah, no. No.
Yeah.
But she was still kicking ass. I love it. I'm glad she's back.
Yes. I was hurt. I'm like, not only did they kill her, they ate her?
Right.
Eating people? What?
Yeah, the eating people threw me under the bus like, is that her bones? Oh, bitch. Come on.
You picking your teeth with her little finger. What the hell?
Right. That threw me under the bus. You know, when she disappeared, I was like, okay. When they killed her off, I was like, okay, really? They just brought her in just to kill her in one episode? Kind of like what they did on S.H.I.E.L.D. with, okay, the girl who played a warrior. And then she came on the show, Xena. She came on the show for like one episode. Yes. And I was convinced for the whole season they were going to bring her back.
Because well, they like, kind of did in flashbacks, but yeah.
But nah. I mean, like, that they were going to bring... Like, why was she there? She could have been anybody. But they only had her there for one episode.
No, she was there for a couple of them.
As flashbacks. I'm talking about in the current story.
No, I was going to say in the current story, I thought she had at least two or three episodes.
She had like two, but I expected more because of who she was, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so when they did it again on Discovery, I was like, man, are you shitting me? Really? Like, but I was happy that they brought her back. That was a really good show, like way better than I anticipated. And I really enjoyed y'all's review of it because it helped me figure out my life because...
Great, thank you.
Very welcome. Yeah, I enjoy y'all's review because I would be sitting there like, what the fuck? I don't, did this just really?
What just happened?
Right. I almost want to watch it behind again so I can just catch up with all y'all's reviews because they were great, for real. So let's talk about Black Lightning a little bit. What did you think overall of the show?
I enjoyed it. I felt like, you know, it was a decent first season CW show. Mm-hmm. It started off strong. It floundered kind of towards the middle. Mm-hmm. It kind of stuck the landing, but kind of didn't. I didn't like how you, what is, are you caught up on Black Lightning?
Oh, yeah, totally.
I didn't like how the yada yada la storyline, and I hope they come back and recoup that because that actor was really good. And I really liked the story. I didn't like that they yada yada, oh yeah, Tobias, this was part of his grand plan to control him. I'm like, that's not interesting. That's not interesting at all. And it ended in a way that they filmed it thinking they probably wouldn't get renewed. And that kind of, I get it, but it still bugged me. They didn't tie up some loose ends. Yeah. But again, since we're getting the second season, they have a chance to do that. I didn't like how they were writing the black women necessarily, specifically Lynn as okay. his wife. Okay. I struggled at times with Anissa's acting choices.
At times. Continue.
I didn't like the way that, even though it was true to life that this happens, mm-hmm. I didn't like the way that everybody kept treating Jennifer as though she was being unreasonable when, I'm sorry, in the first two episodes, she was kidnapped at gunpoint, threatened at school, snatched off her campus, and almost sold into sex slavery. And then very soon after that, she watches her boyfriend being shot and paralyzed. And at no point did we get her any therapy or any talking, but folks are catching attitude with her because she's a teenager who's acting out in a way who's been severely traumatized. So I did not like that at all. I did struggle with that. Other than that, though, and some of the moments got a little too preachy. Like Jefferson was a little, they put a few too heavy speeches on there. I'm like, okay, we get it, message. But then I had to remind myself, I'm not the target demographic, so I'm gonna let that rock. The music choices, with the exception of the God Holly, were good. Yeah, James Remar always brings it in everything he's in. He's the one that played Gambi. He's a great actor. I'm glad he was there. Marvin Cromden, I think his name is, as Tobias Whale, was so good.
Wasn't he, though?
I'm sorry. He's got to be in every season. He's got to be there to the end. They can't have no other villains.
The villains were more compelling than the heroes, if I was to be honest.
Anissa, team too much.
Team too much. But the strut girl, she does have the strut down pat.
Oh, yeah, she got the strut.
She got the walk, but the acting is wowzers.
And even, what she did, it was like, you know, she, for someone so smart, she got these powers and became real stupid. Mm-hmm. And decision-making and stuff like that.
Yeah, when I listened to y'all's reviews, I know that one part you said she was really disrespectful when she was trying to talk to Jennifer over what her parents said, and I had to totally agree with that, yeah.
Like, if you don't sit down, that you are not the mama. You don't get to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's
see. Know your role.
Yeah, she was a lot. She was really team too much. Like, team too much as far as the face and body acting sometimes.
Yeah.
But then team too much with some of the things she was saying and some of the things she was doing.
Yeah.
And then team too much with the outfits they had her in. The second one is not as bad as the first one. Like, the first one had me laugh out loud with my teeth. Like, really. But I liked her as a person, and I liked the story, and I love the family. If they could just get that dynamic right. Like, yeah. The dynamic was just all over the place.
It started strong, and then...
Yeah.
Like you said on the podcast, you have Lynn making the same exact argument the same exact way. And it's like, girl, mm-hmm. you've been having this talk for 9 years. Hang it up. You either on board or you don't. But I'm sorry. That's not what grown folks do.
Right. Yeah. I like Lynn. And I love the chemistry between her and Cress Williams. Mm-hmm. I love the chemistry between the two of them. You could see them naked together. I could see that for sure. But just some of the things that they had her saying and doing just made no sense. And they did, at the end of the story, at the end of the episode, they did wrap it up in a tight little bow. Mm-hmm. And that's just not how life is. Plus, we never got to even see or even really get to know any of the kids in the pods. They were just kids in the pods that died or lived.
We don't even know what happened to them. They was like, yeah, I know what to do with them. Next right. man on the street interviews is like, okay, so what did we do with the kids? Right. Where did they go? What happened?
What would have made sense is if Lynn said, okay, let me get some of your DNA and see if that helps the kids in the pods and put them somewhere where they're safe.
Or even if they had been doing that, like, you could have had little snippets of scenes interspersed between those. If you just had to do the man on the street interviews, which you didn't just have to do, right. You could intersperse between, as people are speaking, you can see what Lynn's doing in terms of healing the kids and returning them to their families and stuff like that. That was a quick fix. They even dropped the ball with Vice Principal Thirsty.
Right.
Like, what happened to her? They could have had a scene of her seeing, you know, people getting gripped up and arrested. And, you know, so we know that she's still in play. Maybe they're not going to bring her back, but we don't know what happened. She's Judy Winslow.
She really is Judy Winslow.
She's Judy Winslow.
Mm-hmm. She really is Judy Winslow. That's funny. The last thing we did see her in was when he was in the high school, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When he was in the high school and she was ushering kids to the other side of the building. Which, by the way, how does she not know that that's Jefferson walking down the hallway in those bright
lights? Ain't that many tall black men
with that shape.
In superhero suits in Freeland.
Stop it. Exactly.
Exactly. Now with that and with that build.
And with, sorry. But ain't the beard showing too?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And how do you not know that's Anissa walking with him? And then if you don't know that, let's say you don't, you that stupid, you don't realize that's Jefferson and Anissa. When Jennifer was like, but, and trying to get to him and looking, you didn't put it together then. There was things that they could have really made, they could have fixed to make the season perfect. It's really a lot in the details for them. But the overall story was excellent. Like, I enjoyed it. I got my black ass life to it. Because if that was, if there was one thing that it was black as fuck.
Yeah.
No argument there. And I've never seen a television show be that black. That Blizzak, I remember when he said, "What's your name?" And she said, "Rent, electric, oh,
car note,
car note." I fell out. I fell out because, nigga, I've said that shit.
She's like, I don't think you did it, but I gotta pay these bills. Like, that is so something someone would do.
Oh, that's so black. I love it. So I just hope that they have a better season next year, and it would be great to just have a show like that on television that's just for us.
Yeah. And Stephen Amell can say his trash ass over on Arrow talking about he want to cross over. We don't want you to cross over. How's that?
I just wish he would shut up. Like, shutting up is free.
Look, do you, I
just shut
you,
up.
I, you're in a Project Fandom groups. I don't know if you saw I posted this. They need to do what they used to do on soap operas when they would just randomly replace folks. Just replace them. No explanation, no surgery, and just do the voiceover. The role of Oliver Queen will now be played by Justin Hartley. Just do it. Just do it.
Well, I mean, that's fair because he's not a great actor. And he can't really fight. So it's not like as if he couldn't be replaced.
He's just a terrible human being.
Yeah, he's
trash ass human being.
He is absolutely trash, and he has a problem with black women.
No redeeming qualities whatsoever. I'm over him.
Mm-mm, none.
Take your ass back to Canada. Shit, you the one Canadian. You the one thing from Canada we don't want.
Have you been keeping up with Arrow?
No, girl. Hell, fuck that show and fuck him. No.
I have, and I'm literally like, it's about that time, Toya. It's about that time to cut it off. Kind of like how I've been feeling about The Flash and how I have gotten rid of The Walking Dead. Like, there's just too much good television out there to watch. Listen, something that makes you unhappy.
And it's too much good television featuring people of color in nuanced role. That's a big part of the reason I started watching these Asian shows and Indian shows. I'm like, I'm tired of seeing people of color in the background or as support or as magical Negroes or as magical Indians or as magical Chinese people or as magical Japanese people or as magical Bangladesh. Can we just be people? And so I'm like, you know what? There's all kinds of streaming options where I can see people of color in all variety of roles. Let me go do that instead.
Mm-hmm. And it makes you happier.
It does. Yeah. I have fun with what I watch. And I have not I watched one episode of The Flash since it's been back, and that was Inner Flash Time. And the only reason I watch it is I listen to Nina and them recap it. And I enjoy the recaps because the recaps are funnier than the show. But when they said it was good, I'm like, okay, let me check it out. And it was good. I did enjoy that one. I have not watched The Flash since it came back. I have not watched The Walking Dead since it came back. Arrow. So, no. I let everybody else land on that grenade for the team.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Although, Legends of Tomorrow is excellent.
Oh, no, I watched Legends. We got to watch the last two. Me and Baby Boy, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Legends of Tomorrow are our shows that we watch. That and those two, and then Doctor Who when it's on.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about S.H.I.E.L.D. Of course, S.H.I.E.L.D. is amazing. It's always amazing. I hope.
How can a show just get better every freaking year?
Yeah.
Every year.
Yeah.
It tops itself. It's like, It's like, oh, you can't top this. And they're like, hold my beer.
Right.
Here we go.
Right, right. Like, I remember being one of those people that stuck it out in the first season because my expectations, I think, were a little bit different than maybe the people that weren't happy with it. I just wanted to see a spy show, and I wanted to see how they were going to do it. And I stuck it out, and I really enjoyed the first season.
And I like Clark Gregg. I think he's a great actor.
I do, too.
I like Clark Gregg. I like Ming-Na Wen. I like Chloe. Like, Chloe Bennett was stuffed. I struggled with her up until the episode where she got shot.
Okay.
And then beyond that episode, you really started to see her come out. I was like, okay, okay. Love J. August Richards. Mm-hmm. When I saw he was in the pilot, I was like, Gunn from Angel. Yeah, yes.
Yep. I love me some Gunn. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw season two and I was like, holy shit. Then I saw season three and I was like, oh my God, my wig is gone. Season four, season five. It's just been an amazing show. I've been watching shows that are along this type of genre for years because, you know, I love Buffy. We're doing an Alias rewatch in the podcast family.
Did you see that?
Group.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Alias?
No.
What?
No.
What?
And I'm not interested.
What? Alias is so good, though. It's so good. There are some. Wow.
Take your word for it.
There's like two black characters in it now. I'm trying to think. It's been so long since I've watched it, but that was a great show. And so something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes along, and I cannot find a show that compares to it. I love Legends, but still Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is 100% above Legends.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm so excited to watch that show every week. Like, that's my quiet time. It's the only show that I watch where my phone won't be on. It'll be turned over because I don't care what anybody has to say, you know, during that 45 minutes.
Well, that's how I got my youngest into it. At first, he was trying to watch it with me when I was watching it. And he's like, I just don't want to watch it. It's not interesting. Come to find out, the issue was he was watching it with his device. So he was missing critical stuff. So over the summer, I was like, dude, do me a favor. Try this with me. We are going to pick a show that is our show to watch together. And the deal is we cannot have our devices out. I won't have mine out. You won't have yours out. And he's like, okay. You know, because that's our time. So we started watching. And he got, like, immediately, he was like, wait, they were doing this and I missed it? He really enjoyed it. And so he was like, wait, when are we finishing? Every time I came home, we were like, are we watching tonight? Are we watching tonight?
Aww.
So he loves it. He loves it.
Yeah, you can't watch it with your phone because you'll miss the little details.
Mm-hmm.
And this show is built off of details.
It is. It really is.
That's the beauty of this show. So, like, you know, when people complain about season one is where all of the little details began. And you got to know, you know, who Fitzsimmons was or why May never smiles or what Daisy became Sky, and it just, and every year it pays off for you as a viewer because they'll put in seeds of what happened in the beginning in the season that you're watching. So this season, you know, it has
so many Easter eggs from season one. So many of them.
Come on, it's hard to even put it together, but I mean, Fitzsimmons alone to watch their relationship evolve the way it has.
Look, when I'm sorry, and you can judge me, I don't care. I have watched that 4-minute clip that's on YouTube from episode 12.
Aww.
When Mike shows up,
yes,
and he gets off that plane,
yes, yes.
And every time I'm shouting like in victory with my hands in the air, like it's the first time I've seen him get off that plane, I'm like, yes, Michael,
yes. You know how? Because look, we've been asking where the hell he's been.
Since season two.
Right, for like two or three seasons.
Well, yeah, and see, someone, like, I had made a comment on that video, and people were like, I don't know why I'm crying now that he's here. I was like, because he was their first case.
Mm-hmm.
He was their first case as a team. And then someone was like, also, because we haven't seen him since season two. And I was like, wait, wasn't he in season three? I forgot that everything that happened to him happened when Zha Ying was in the mix. We haven't seen him since, like, midway through season two.
Really? Because I thought he was in season three, too.
I did, too. The last time we saw him was season two.
Oh, yeah, I missed him. It was so good to see him. And I'm so mad that he didn't stay around. I hate that he keeps leaving.
You're not but on you know what? Show, I thought about it, especially at? Watching him take out all the phantoms. He's G-code. He's a G-code. If you think about it, his abilities.
So is Sky. If you're going to think like that, so is Sky.
Well, except they've hindered her because even with the gauntlet, she can't always be using her powers because it's damaging her bones and her skin and her tissue.
But she is even kind of a cheat code, though.
Huh?
She is kind of a cheat code, though.
She is, but not as much as Mike is. Think about how he took out Lash. Think about how he took out Hive. He's a cheat code.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who I was hoping to come back when they did those episodes where they were bringing back people was Lash. I was hoping they'd bring back Lash, but they only had him in for like a couple of seconds.
Yeah, at the beginning and at the end, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was happy that they didn't bring back Ward, even though, you know, he's been back every season.
Red Dalton.
What'd you say?
I said, let me some Red Dalton.
You know, I don't hate the love of Red Dalton. Not at all. Y'all can love Red Dalton till the wheels fall off. I hate the love of Ward. That's what I'm always like. Ward was always just unmitigated bullshit. He was trash. He was trash. Yeah.
Oh, no, he was sexy trash, but he was trash.
He was trash. But I wish, I mean, I'm glad they didn't bring him back as a focus again. I'm glad their villain is different this year.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think he's run his course. They, you know, got out while the getting's good. I will say that Ruby's getting on my nerves.
Yeah, I'm tired of Ruby.
And it's one of those things where I know she's not the ultimate villain because that's not how this show works.
Right.
But I'm going to say it. I'm sorry. It's something about that actress I don't like.
Really? But it's not her acting. It's just the actress you're talking about.
The actress. Now, I don't know her as a person. This is the first thing I've seen her about. But there's just something about her that...
Well, she's a petulant child. So that
it's not
be it.
It's not even that. It's,
no? Okay. That's
it's
it for me.
Her. Yeah, it's her. There's something I can't put my finger on it. I don't like that actress.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they end her story, and I'm sure they will end her storyline this season, because they rarely bring villains along, with the exception of Ward. They rarely bring villains longer. And I hope that it gets renewed, because we have so much fun watching that show.
Yeah. Although, like I said, I love it. If it ends, I'll be sad, but you know, they're going to go, if they go out, they go out on a high note.
Mm-hmm.
They're not Supernatural waiting way past their prime to leave.
Supernatural's on season, 14, I think?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I dipped out on season 10 because I was like, come on, guys, I can't do any more of these. We're gonna.
I tried,
the
but
shows.
The truth of the matter is they should have cut it at season 5 because now it's like there's no stakes. There's no stakes. Dean dies, he comes back. Then Sam dies, he comes back. Then Dean dies again, he comes back. It's like, if no one's going to die, why do I care?
That's true. That's true. And
on a show built around death, why do I care if no one's at risk?
Well, everyone else dies, though. It's just Sam and Dean.
And you know what? I think the beginning of the end for me was season 10, too, because isn't that the season they killed Charlie in the stupidest way possible?
It's either 9 or 10, but it was after they killed Charlie that I was done. Because I was like, okay.
Her death was unnecessary and unnecessarily brutal.
That there you go. That's how I felt. And it felt like for a woman that has been watching this show for 10 seasons, I've seen them kill every single woman that comes on that show terribly for no reason. For no reason.
And here you had a recurring character who was smart, who was funny, who contributed to the team, who was likable.
Mm-hmm.
And they just brutalize her just because they could.
Yeah, because even she could have died in a totally different manner. Like, it wasn't important to the story the way that she died. So,
or if Felicia Day wanted to be done with the show, they could have written her out a completely different way. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to murder her character off.
No, they didn't.
Not, and especially not like that.
Yeah, I thought that the way they did it was tacky, and I get it. The story is about Sam and Dean. I get that, but. You always have supporting characters, you know.
Like Bobby.
Like Bobby. Oh, Bobby.
I miss Bobby.
I miss Bobby. Like, if Bobby was still on, I would still watch. Because I love Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby was also the beginning of the end for me, too.
Was it?
Yeah. Bobby was the beginning of the end. Charlie was the end of the end.
I could see that because Bobby meant so much to the story. But they killed Bobby right. Like, the way they killed Bobby, I can't argue with it.
No, but still, I didn't like it.
Yeah, I totally get that. Because Bobby... He was
the heart of the show.
He really was. They were different characters after Bobby left.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Dean. So, who I always liked better than Sam, even though Sam is finer than Dean. Yeah, I used to have these whole like conversations about that, but yeah, I can't see watching Supernatural though. 14 seasons of what?
I actually tried watching, what was the last season? Because I went ahead and watched them on Netflix. Uh-huh. I think I finished season 11. I think that was the one where God's sister shows up. It was just, and I think you heard me explain it on, I explained it before. Maybe I explained it. I feel like we were talking about it at the back end of one of our Black Lightning episodes, and I explained this plot line, and Parrish was like, the fuck? It's just as stupid as I made it sound. Mm-hmm. And I think I made it sound better than it actually aired.
Yeah, I Supernatural lost its good storytelling probably around season 8, 7, 8.
And I'll argue once Eric Kripke left, they were a boat without a rudder, basically.
Basically, yeah. And they should have killed that show a long time ago. The people that are still watching are just stands. At this point, they're just stands.
People who write the fan fiction and love Jensen Ackles and Jared Padalecki. I had to think about his name. But yeah, I mean, and it's the ultimate and right privilege because I've read where they said, oh, we'll just do the show until Jared and Jensen get tired of doing it. Who gonna get tired of a steady paycheck? And I mean, like, really? So in no other universe do I know where I can just say, well, I'll just get this job until I get tired and then you can fire me. Huh?
Well, and it's the ultimate white male privilege, because I wouldn't say a white woman could do what they're doing.
Oh, I agree.
It's got to be white male privilege. But yeah, girl, I can't watch that show no more. I'm good. No, thank you. No, thank you. So this week is the anniversary of Prince's death, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And so do you have a favorite Prince song?
Oh, God. No, because they're all great.
I can tell you mine.
I can tell you one from each, like, era. How's that?
Okay, come on.
So go ahead. You go first. Okay. I got to pull this up.
Okay. So my favorite a song by Prince, hands down, has always been Darling Nikki.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That is a good one.
That's my favorite. I can listen to that song back to back, and I've done it back to back to back for hours. I used to pole dance down here, and we would have pole dance competitions. And the first competition I ever did was to Darling Nikki. Like, that song just touches my soul. Now, Kiss is another one that I love as well. But there's so many Prince songs,
mm-hmm.
that it's, I understand your trepidation. Like, I
so let's see. Darling Nikki, mm-hmm. Adore.
Ugh, Adore. Ah. Forgot all about Adore. Yes, Adore's a good one.
Get Off.
Mm-hmm. Good one. Mm-hmm.
Erotic City.
I'm not really familiar with Erotic City. Now I gotta go play that. Hold on.
And then, oh gosh, what is that song from one of his last albums that he did? I'm trying to find it. Oh crap, I don't know where it is. That's gonna bug me.
Well, think about it. We can come back to it.
I'm gonna find it on YouTube because it's not on my phone.
So Adore and Exotic. I need to listen to Exotic City and Adore.
Erotic City, yeah.
Erotic City. I love Adore. Now I got to listen to that. Damn it. Damn it, man. Damn it.
Way Back Home, that's what it is. From his newer album, from Artificial.
Oh.
You remember that one?
Mm-mm.
Hold on. I think I got it.
Hey, any person or object whatsoever that requires your attention is something that has veered from its path and preordained destiny of total enlightenment.
Never wanted a typical life. Scripted role, the trophy wife. All I ever wanted to be left alone. See my bed's made up at night, cause in my dreams I roam. Just trying to find.
Oh yeah, that one.
Man, just listening to him makes me want to bawl.
Look, and did you see that article that came out Friday, I think it was, where they said that they can't file charges because they can't prove that it was done deliberately? Yeah. But it looks like that the prescriptions he was getting, he didn't know that they were laced with that drug.
Yeah. I think fentanyl.
Yeah, like he thought he was just getting his regular painkillers, and because he, you know, was such a private person and didn't want people to know that he was using them, he would send people out to get the prescription for them, but not necessarily in his name. And so that's just heartbreaking that he was killed by something he didn't even know he was on. That is devastating.
So he was killed for no reason.
Yeah, but they can't prove that it was deliberate, and they can't track who may have provided it for him, so they can't bring charges.
Yeah. Yeah, because as far as he knows, he probably had been taking painkillers for so long that he eats an extra one, no big deal. You know, maybe he smokes some bud or has a drink, and then you don't pay attention to how things interact with each other, and that'll kill you. Easy. Yeah. So, yeah, that is, it's tough, man. Even listening to that song, I was, like, tearing up over here. I just... That's a huge loss that I don't think we'll ever be able to come back from.
Not at all. Not at all.
That's a bigger loss to me than Michael Jackson was.
Oh, I agree, because Michael, I love Michael, but Michael had kind of peaked by the time he passed away. Yeah. Prince, I don't know that he was ever going to peak. That's just how creative,
talented,
how much
he was.
A creative and talent he was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's real talk. Yeah,
He was always reinventing himself in a way that even Michael couldn't do.
Mm-hmm. And he had such a great personality too.
Yes,
like he was just funny without trying.
I love the stories that like Common and Questlove and everybody's been coming out with about their Prince encounter,
or the Dave Chappelle show when they were doing his Prince encounter. Like I believe all of that. So it's been a tough week just thinking about, you know, that loss. So, So what I want to do now is pause for my interview with the ladies from Cthulha. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Universal FanCon, if we could.
Danger Will Robinson. Sorry.
I have a very special interview that I have today with Kay from Cthulha. She has a retail clothing business with her sister in California. Hi, Kay.
Hey, LaToya.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be on the podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for being here with us. I heard how successful you are, and I was super excited to get you on the air. So tell me a little bit about yourselves, you and your sister.
Yeah, my sister and I, California natives. We had our corporate careers in communications, specifically in PR and public relations. PR and public affairs. And we lived back east for most of our adult lives. And we have a family business, which was called Africana Imports. And so our mom was retiring in 2014. And after a couple years of just discussion, we decided to take it over and rebranded the business as Cthulha. So it's actually Cthulha by Africana to kind of bridge the two businesses together. And the business was founded in 1971 by my mom on Sawston and Crenshaw. So when we took it over, we kind of brought it into, more of the digital age and had an opportunity to expand the the business to a new demographic through our takeover, and just bringing it back to a whole new demographic that didn't know about it previously. So it's been an exciting process. So we've been there doing that since 2014, and, you know, switching over from corporate careers and, you know, being in offices to then being an entrepreneur and running your own business and working in partnership together.
That's kind of cool, man. So this business actually started from your mom.
Yeah, exactly. And we grew up in the business. So she started out in the 70s. She was a social worker by trade. And kind of a similar thing happened that's going on right now. You know, it was just, it was a time for it. Just, she just started out, you know, honestly making a couple things and then selling those and making more. And then the demand just increased and it ended up being, you know, this bigger thing that she just continued on. And, you know, we even have clients that, you know, predate us because we're not, you know, we were born after that. So, but that predate us and they're like, oh, we go back all the way to your mom's original location. And so it's kind of cool to see all the different generations that shop with us. You know, you'll have like mothers and daughters and even grandmothers, you know, three generations shopping at one time.
Oh, that's really cool. So do you get your fabrics from Africa then, I imagine?
Yeah, uh-huh. So primarily what we do is we do contemporary clothing using African textiles. So we get our fabric from Africa, mainly West Africa, and then we actually have on site at our boutique, we have our production, you know, facility. We've actually had some of the same production team and seamstress for over like about 25 years now. So really kind of gotten known for creating really quality craftsmanship so that, you know, we all know that the fabric really stays and lasts a long time, but we think it's really important to also, you know, have it be made well and be able to stand the test of time and be part of your wardrobe. And we try to show people how they can dress for themselves and how they don't feel like, you know, the prints are wearing them. We want people to feel very much in control and feel like, you know, that's something that they can not just wear one time, but, you know, incorporate into their wardrobe. You know, we were often wearing like our African print pencil skirts with our blazers at work, or, you know, mashing it, you know, over jeans and things like that. So we try to bring a little bit of that education into everyday interactions with people.
Oh, that's really cool. So do you mainly work with women or men? Or both?
So, yeah, you know, interesting enough, the business started out primarily for men. We still actually cater to men. It's just now it's expanded. You know, we definitely do a lot of things for women, but we also do things for men. And then we do some select items for children, too. We found, like, a lot of times, depending on the time of the year, there's a lot of kids programs, and, you know, we've found a lot of people doing like mommy and me shoots or family portraits, and they want to have all different looks. So yeah, it's exciting. We're part of a lot of people's the most important times of their lives, like either from the most important times to their lives to just their everyday lives. So we will do, you know, like baby showers or, you know, the first baby photos or people's weddings and renewal vows or, you know, the first time traveling internationally, you know. So it's always cool when people come back and they'll let us know either, you know, oh, you did my mom's wedding dress, or, you know, just piecing all the pieces of history together. And it's fun. It's an enjoyable experience to be part of people's lives in that way.
So that's interesting, because a lot of times I find it starts with women and then it expands to men.
Mm-hmm.
Actually swap. Your mom actually did men and then expanded to women.
Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with the time specifically. Mm-hmm. I think in the 70s, it just happened to be like there was, you know, dashikis were really popular and the men were, you know, just the ones at the time that were, the demand was there and the desire. And as she started to do that, you know, just started to branch off into women. But I mean, I'd actually say like some of our men are the most loyal clientele. We have men that come in like either annually or like monthly, and they come in the exact same date and time. They're like, you know, it's clockwork. So, they're very specific. So I think men are also, when they find something good, they really stick with it. Mm-hmm. And so it's been, you know, we enjoy it. We enjoy that process because we also think that a lot of men in this space, they're not as catered to. You know, there's so much happening right now with African print and I think a lot of women's clothing. But, you know, because of our knowledge of like how the men are and how they operate and because their loyalty and just wanting to express themselves as well, I think, it, you know, it's something that we don't want to ignore and we try to cater to them in specific ways and, you know, launch special editions and different designs specifically for men so that they, you know, that they feel attended to. And, you know, it's easy to, you know, for women, I think we want choices and options. And so it's easy to like have a whole roster of options for the women, but we don't want to leave the men out. And so we try to make sure to cater to them specifically and do new styles and additions for them.
Okay. So are your items off rack? Or are your items made based, you know, like on a custom item? How do you do it?
Yeah, mm-hmm, sure. Yeah, we do actually both. We have a boutique, so we have a whole, you know, storefront. We redesigned the storefront, so it's a really beautiful location. I think people are always really excited when they come in and see how we've paid attention to specific aesthetics in the store and really try to create an enjoyable shopping experience. And really bring some luxury, you know, to it. We always say, like, you know, we're in LA, so, you know, there's Beverly Hills, you know, not too far away. We're like, oh, Beverly Hills doesn't own luxury. We can have our own luxury. You know, we don't have to just expect that from these other areas. Like, we can have that in our community, too. And we're in the Windsor Hills location, which is, like, the Baldwin Hills area, which is, you know, historically one of the... is one of the last, I guess, concentrated Black wealth in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to continue to build that legacy of supporting not only like home ownership, but also, you know, having the retail to match that's Black owned. And so, yes, we do make, I say about half and half. We do half custom, half ready to wear on the rack. You'll kind of see some, if you, you know, check out our Instagram at, Kutula, that's KUTULA. You'll see kind of a mix of different things that we've done. Some of them are custom and some of them are, you know, people shop off the rack, but, yeah, so, you know, it helps to be able to cater to both sides when people want to create their own unique, expression, or if you know people are coming in and shopping for, you know, just everyday wear or just something that they need quickly, we try to facilitate both sides of that process.
So do your sizes run pretty comparable? Like, do you go up to plus sizing?
We absolutely do. I think right now we actually had an increase on both sides to go to really small, mm-hmm. really like go on the smaller side and go to on the larger side. So we actually found that we had to go to like pretty much like 0 to 20, maybe like 24, 28. So yeah, we definitely, we've always, interesting enough, I'd say most of the life of our business, we catered to probably like a Mrs. sizing. Mm-hmm. So Mrs. versus contemporary. So it was more like, you know, maybe like 10s through like 24. And then when we took over the brand and it was getting exposed to different, you know, just, I think that every 10 or 15 years, you know, there's like a cycle and it just shifts a little bit and it gets exposed to different, audiences. I think we're in a period of time where, you know, it's unprecedented only because I think before when we've had these type of movements, we didn't have like the digital age that was helping support it. So now we found that, you know, we need to just be able to have it on all ends of the sizing chart. And that's exciting for us because we focus on getting everything like fitted and tailored. And I think our clients have actually, you know, they can spot our clothing. You know, we've dressed some people, like on tele, you know, done, you know, TV shows and red carpet, and we've had people watching certain shows and seeing something, and they're like, oh, we know that's Catullah. So it's always interesting to see in a space when people can point out our style aesthetic.
Yeah, that's really cool. So what is your inspiration when you guys are making items? What do you guys use as your inspiration to make them?
Yeah, I think most of the time the fabric will speak to us. I think, you know, there's a photo we have on our marketing materials. It's like this skirt with a red fan that our local model, Nakia Phoenix, who's an influencer in the natural hair care space and is a pretty known model in that area as well. I knew that the fabric was going to be a hit before it was made into anything. And so I'll know that specifically when fabrics are just really like stand out and like going to be just next level. And so a lot of times the fabric speaks to us. Certain fabrics, you know, it just feels perfect for a jacket or feels perfect for a pant. You know, we have a lot of vintage items because we've been in business so long. So if you come in the store, you'll see we have a lot of vintage crowns, like the hats, you know. And then as far as fabrics, most recently we did design something using a vintage African silk for the red carpet for it was actually for Michael B. Jordan's parents. His mom was in a vintage silk jacket, which was from probably, I think, the late 70s or the early 80s. It might be the early 80s. I think it's from the early 80s. So, you know, something like that, we literally would always see it. And, you know, it didn't really speak to us until that moment of time when we were looking at the design and that person's sort of personality. And so, you know, I think it starts with the fabric, really.
That's amazing. You guys sound like you guys have been doing some phenomenal work for years. So tell me a little bit how you got into Black Panther and Hollywood. It sounds like you've got some really high-end clients.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. So I'd say for the lifespan of the business, because we've done custom, I think, and we've been in Hollywood's backyard, we've always had, you know, you have living and working actors that want to express themselves in a different way. So, you know, I think my mom has always had clients like that, whether she knew exactly who they were was, you know, questionable. Like I definitely got frustrated sometimes when she told me that, like, oh, her good friend and client, you know, she saw him and she's like, oh yeah, that's my good friend client. I'm like, Blair Underwood, really? I was like, no. She's like, yeah, he's my client. I'm like, well, he also does some other stuff too. And I remember growing up and just, you know, I would happen to be in the store and then all of a sudden I'd be like, Mom, do you know who that is? Like, you know, so it's very interesting now to see that replicate. And that happens in a similar fashion because we're in Hollywood's backyard. When they're looking for authentic looks or just looking for education, you know, whether they're going to be doing something that is supposed to be representative of African culture or based in African country, or they're working, you know, on a project that person just, you know, would dress that way. We play that role of consultant as well as a supplier, you know, for whether it's TV shows. We've done a lot of stuff for several, I think we've done like at least the past three seasons of The Voice. They come in and a lot of the contestants, most of them have kind of an idea of what style aesthetic they want. So we built that relationship with costumers on that show. And that happens pretty regularly each season now. And then there's always, you know, different shows. I think last year there was a show on, was it NBC, The Mayor? And then, you know, there was like Netflix, you know, Dear White People. It was just a bunch of different shows. You know, they came in for this Sia's doing a movie. It's in production right now. They came in and did a lot of stuff for that. Of course, there's Black Panther. The way that actually happened was, in 2015, when they were working on Captain America's Civil War, they came in to to get items for a big Lego scene in Legos. So it was a big stunt sequence, which was pretty cool because it was the first time, although we like worked on films and done, a variety of different things. That was pretty cool because we hadn't done a stunt sequence. So that was, you kind of learn a little bit of movie making in the process, which is interesting. And so now, you know, the more you do it, the more you know exactly how to cater to costume designer's needs, which is a little different. Like working with stylists and red carpet and working with costume designers, it's actually really different. And I think now the two are kind of melding together, but
that makes sense because you have to be able to let that person move in your clothes.
Exactly. And, you know, and also just visually, if something, it's going to be like 50 feet high, you know, it depends, you know, it's like certain prints can work for that and certain prints are very different. And so, it's a cool process. I can't lie. It's very interesting. So when they came to us, it was for a stunt sequence. And so they needed doubles and doubles of everything. And so we outfitted this like huge scene and fight sequence. And I think when you see the movie, it's pretty cool because it's like Scarlett Johansson and she's going through and fighting. And then she even like uses some of our stuff as weapons. Like she uses like some baskets to like hit somebody over the head, and I'm like, oh, that's our basket. it was kind of fun, like, watching it. And so our things were actually in the opening scene and then the closing scene of Civil War. And so they came in about three different times while they were shooting. At various stages, they're still figuring things out. And so I think the last bits that they came in, we were excitedly anticipating because we had researched and knew that there was going to be an appearance from the Black Panther, but it hadn't come up yet in them coming in, which was very surprising because we're like, okay, we know Black Panther is going to be this movie. Like, when are you coming in for that specifically? Mm-hmm. And so finally, their third visit, they were like, okay, we're working on Chadwick's, his look, not in the superhero look, but just the regular T'Challa look. And so we actually got a chance to kind of influence the process because they were like, oh, we're going to be sketching tomorrow, let's look at fabrics, what do you think, what are your thoughts? So it was actually a really fun process, and so from that moment on we were kind of like ready. We were like, we knew Black Panther, have the multiple picture deal. We knew at that moment like it was going to be groundbreaking. I think since then, I don't even know if my excitement has been matched since they first came in, and I've just been waiting. So it's been a few years. I don't follow comic books like that, but I think I knew how historical it was going to be. And we were just waiting. And so we worked on that film. And then because most of Marvel's films, they work with different costume design teams, just based on the director, they build their team how they want. And so when they came in for the Black Panther movie, immediately we were like, okay, we were waiting for you. And as a matter of fact, they had a different name for the film. When they're in production, they call it something different. And so we were like, yeah, we know who you are. That's Black Panther. We're like, it was a lot of excitement. And fortunately, because as most people know now, most of the team behind the scenes are people of color, Black women and men. And that was no different working with the costume team, with Ruth Carter's team. And some of the folks on there. So when they came in, we did like a celebratory like dance because we were like just so over the moon, and we knew how historic it was. And the girls we actually work with, we formed really close relationships with, they have a great, exciting history as well in costuming. They work for, they did a lot of stuff for. They actually were costumers on the first season of Empire. Their names are Rita and Alita McGee. And so we formed a really close bond with them. They're actually sisters as well.
I was going to say, another sister duo, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So it's really, they've done a lot of important things in their own right. And I remember they just did the New Edition movie, which was like amazing and so much fun. You think going down memory lane, and we're just so proud to be able to work with people like that in this space. And so we were just over the moon, and we were telling them, oh my gosh, this is gonna be incredible. So that was I think about 2016 or 2017. Since then, we were ready. And, we just were recently last Monday at UCLA, we were on a panel with Ruth Carter. It was a panel that was called From Wakanda to Zamunda, 30 years later. So it happens to be the 30th anniversary of coming to America. And so the costume designer, Deborah Landis, was on the panel, and then Ruth Carter was on the panel. And so they kind of took us through behind the scenes of their whole process. And so we were there sort of as, you know, experts in the space and just facilitating the conversation and asking them questions to, and you know, the audience there. And that was honestly an honor and incredible, and just being able to see all the work. And it's just exciting. You know, I think we're in a really, really amazing time. And I think contrary to that, you know, where you see something like that and you're like, whoa, it's 30 years later, we haven't really done something similar. That's way too long to go. I think we're in a time where everybody knows that and it's going to be different. And I think there's not going to be such gaps like that, that gives us that excitement. So I'm excited for what's to come. And I think we've already seen from just some of the TV shows in development and people that have started to come to us about certain things in development, that I think we're all going to be pleased, you know, coming up in the next couple months and years as far as content and just having more rich content that gives us that sort of excitement.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at your Instagram and it's really, you've got some beautiful fabrics, some beautiful skin colors on here, and I see that you've got quite a few people. Now, the people that you have on your Instagram, are they wearing items of yours?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. Those are all items of ours. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys make some beautiful, beautiful items. Stunning.
Thank you.
And I see you also make jewelry as well, not just fabric. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, we like to put a spotlight on creators that do different things. You know, we do the clothing, and sometimes we actually most recently started to bring in select designers that didn't have retail space. You know, it's not, I think we found that both for the jewelers and as well as select, you know, designers that might have a specific aesthetic that we want to bring in and incorporate with our line. You know, we've worked with a designer that previously was carried in Nordstrom's. It was like a really excellent menswear designer and made things in African textile. And he actually was like, you know, they didn't know what to do with me, you know? And so it really, he was like, I want to work with you guys. And so that's another partnership that started because we realized, you know, these designers are not getting the right spotlight. They're not, you know, you need a retailer. It's good to have online as well, but I think it's really important to have a place where people can, you know, see your work and be able to market to a specific customer and have them really get that education. And so we found that we were doing this for a number of years with jewelers and, you know, people using semi-precious stones and just natural elements, which is, you know, probably some of the things you're seeing right now. We're having a couple trunk shows this week from some specialty jewelry designers. So we like to just curate for our clients and give them exposure to, you know, sort of the best of the best. So we curate, you know, exactly like that. We'll get, you know, really quality, you know, jewelry designers and different aesthetics. We had two trunk shows this week and two totally different aesthetics. One was a little bit more, you know, used more African print in the design for purses and necklaces. And then the other is a little bit more of like, you know, it's a little bit more of like artisan kind of gold and brass with semi-precious stones. That's coming up on Saturday. And so we just like to put a spotlight on people that are focusing on excellence and doing things to cater to, you know, our specific needs. So that's how that evolved a little bit. And so now we're excited to carry a few different designers. You know, we have a menswear line called Dent to Man, and then we have three women's wear designers right now that we carry in store. Mm-hmm. One's based out of Canada, one's based out of the southern region of Africa and Zambia, and then one's out of New Jersey by way of Nigeria. So, you know, we like to bring some of those so people, you know, don't have to go online and scramble and search. We like to bring that and show people what's the best that's available and offer that to them and sort of take out that whole, you know, shopping process. You can Pinterest things, you know, forever and save things forever. And sometimes, you know, you need that help to be able to say, okay, here's, you know, sort of the best as far as quality and sort of aesthetic, you know, and we're helping you to make that decision and actually, you know, make the purchase and have it in your wardrobe instead of, you know, just aspiring to it.
So I see that you guys did a custom dress for Lupita Nyong'o.
So that one, we actually, when you look at the caption and everything, we actually designed for her mother. We collaborated with Lupita and for her mother, because her mom was going to be her date and she wanted her to have a really, you know, unique and elegant look. I think her mom had previously worn looks that were a little bit more understated. So they reached out to us, which is actually pretty exciting. I mean, I think prior to her reaching out for us, she'd actually referred us to her cast member. So she, you know, her, what was it? It was Daniel Kaluuya, stylist, came in and was like, you know, Lupita recommended us. And that was the first we had known about it. So we were like, oh, we're on her radar. Amazing. But I think that relationship had inadvertently been made from our work for David Oyelowo for the Queen of Katwe movie, where we did his whole global press tour. So anytime you saw him in African print for that press tour, that was us. So from, you know, the LA premiere to the Toronto premiere to, you know, him being on the Tonight Show and, you know, all kinds of stuff. We did like probably 15 looks for him. And so they were side by side, you know, she was his co-star. So we just, you know, a lot of times in those time frames, we just think, oh, you know, she's probably like, oh, nice look, you know, but we didn't know that, you know, she would retain and know who we were. And so when it came time for the, you know, now around this time, Black Panther, you know, she'd actually been referring us to people. So that was pretty cool and exciting. And then she came in, I mean, her team came in and then we went to her to then, you know, work with her and work with her mom and really, you know, give her that special attention that I think now we're realizing when we're working with these celebrity teams and everything, we found that, that they don't often get that same level, especially, you know, people of color, they don't often get that same attention. You know, we find that like when they're part of styling teams and you have these huge styling teams and they have a list of different rosters and different clients and different celebrities, you know, and they may, you know, Versace may not be the top of the food chain, even though they might be, you know, our number one, they may not be the number one for the rest of America. Mm-hmm. So, we like to just bring that high level of service and, you know, do on-site fittings and come to them. And we get that they're busy people and we recognize their influence. So we try to do everything we can to cater to them. And so I think initially we were surprised that doesn't happen as much, you know. So we wanted to take it back. We're like, okay, you know, we can give you what Versace isn't giving you.
And better, actually.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. When I look at her dress, I think one of the most beautiful things that people do, the colors are phenomenal, but the mixing of fabrics, really, that's a tough one to do.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually really exciting. And that happened exactly how I told you previously. It's really the fabrics. I mean, I saw those two fabrics and I was like, amazing. Like, I was like, I just felt like it was so special and really completely lucked out. I had never even seen fabrics like that. If you see it, it has this like glitter and shimmer to it. Mm-hmm. And it was very exciting because like if you really like hone in on the details of the fabric together, it was really special. So I think moments like that, you just can't predict when you're just going to find the right thing. And it worked beautifully. And we're just really happy to be able to take those risks and let people trust the process. And really, I mean, honestly, the difference, you know, we cater to our everyday clients, you know, celebrity clients, whoever, you know, a lot of our clients, you know, you're spending good money, and you want quality, really doesn't differentiate. Like the same type of, customer service we give to these, you know, celebrity teams is the same client, is the same customer service we give to our clients in store. And I think our clients really appreciate that because, again, we're not always afforded that high level of customer service when we're shopping in other places. And so I think we just, you know, we recognize that we like a high level of service personally, Beau and I, and, you know, my mom, of course, and we were raised in that, mm-hmm. just knowing how important it was to just give people this great experience. And so I think we brought that to bear in our store. And, you know, we're happy to say that, that that's the case. I think one of our clients we were working on, we dressed April Rain, who was a creator of Oscar So White, and mm-hmm. we were dressing her around Oscar season. I mean, award season, and we were working on some things, you know, with Ava DuVernay and her team, and like April was aware of how many different things were going on in store and with these teams. And, you know, she actually reflected, and I think she did a tweet about it. She was like, the girls are amazing. They treat you like one in the same, you know, with, you know, an A-list celebrity together with a regular client. And to me, that was the highest compliment, because I think sometimes, especially coming out of this Black Panther period, people see, you know, oh, you work with X celebrity and X person, and wow, you know, and people were starting to get a little intimidated. And it was important for us to let people know that, you know, it's not about celebrities. Like, we're all bringing our own unique flair in our individual lives. And you'll see that we're pretty consistent with that when you come in. You know, everyone, we enjoy people, and we think everybody's unique and has a unique offering. So I think coming out of this time period, I really wanted to impress upon that for people that haven't seen us or haven't visited us and didn't know about us, that we're there for everybody. You know, it's not just, it's not like we're just focusing on some elite group or something. We think that eliteness should be brought to all of us, you know, so we want it to be very inclusive.
I appreciate that. So I want to kind of talk a little bit about some of your lessons you've learned in business. I know that you talked about building relationships is important to you. What's your advice for somebody that wants to create a business relationship? How would they go about it?
Yeah, I think honesty is really key. Mm-hmm. Honesty and authenticity. I was actually talking to someone who, you know, is a creative, and he's in the music industry, and I was letting them know, you know, because I realized kind of I've been on both, like, all different sides of this equation, you know, as a person that works for a company, as an individual slash consumer, and now as a, you know, entrepreneur and, like, business owner. And what I've realized is that, you know, it's really about building your network of people and building it for the long term. I can't impress upon that enough that we can't be short-term, we can't be short-sighted with our relationships. So it might be really exciting for someone to build a relationship with X person that's, like, doing amazing things right now and is great. And I think if you have the opportunity to build that relationship with that person, great. But I would say focus on building that relationship authentically and not necessarily going in for the huge ask right away. You know, I think you have to understand, like, in every relationship, the right timing will come to bear, and that may be something that you both see immediately, and it may be something that, you know, you then see in a few months. So I would just say, you know, I would say not to feel that you have to immediately leverage all your relationships as soon as they're made. You know, I have an example of that can be really exciting and enticing. We met Angela Bassett's stylist 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think she was doing press for, like, Whitney, and her style aesthetic is really specific. And I think we recognize that we built a relationship, we made a really great bond, and you want to recognize that. So you know that when you made a great bond with somebody and you connected on a person-to-person level, that's set and that's there, and so you have that standing. So we actually didn't, you know, we connected and we kind of saw, you know, kind of explored a little bit what was possible. But I think then we took a step back and we're like, okay, this will all come together at the right timing. And so we found ourselves then, like, I think it was the week before the premiere, realizing, you know, as different people's teams were coming to us, we were like, oh, we need to reach out to, you know, Angela and her team. And even in that process, we were kind of intimidated because, of course, it's Angela Bassett and she's like the queen mother in this movie. We're like, I'm sure like she's everything's been taken care of. Like, I don't want to be presumptuous like little old us. You know, like, hey, do you need anything? But we actually did do that. And so she reached out to us and was like, oh, my gosh, I've been thinking about you guys. I'm so glad that you reached out because everything's happening last minute. And she's like, let's come together. Let's get some looks. And it was we were kind of intimidated in that time frame, but we knew that we had built that relationship and that we weren't just one of those people who were like, just reaching out, you know, and blasting different people. You know, we knew that she was getting inundated, but because we had made that relationship prior, it made it more authentic. So I think she really appreciated that. And she did let us know, you know, like people are reaching out from the woodworks, but because we had built that relationship, I think she recognized that and also really valued that as well. So for us, that was a prideful moment because, you know, you want to regularly send things to people who can expose and change your business. You want to send them stuff every month, right? You'd be like, oh, let's send her this and that. But I think it's really about being strategic and knowing when that sweet spot comes aligned. So that way you're not having to do so much selling. It like the selling does itself. It was perfect because I think we knew that it had to be the right opportunity. You don't want to be forcing people, especially in the space. You want it to come naturally and you want them to embrace it. You don't want to have to be, you know, making it your idea and selling it to them. So I'd say that's the best thing I can say is really like really being authentic in the relationship and understanding when the timing is right to come in with like an ask or a partnership.
So what I heard from you was be honest, be authentic, but also take calculated risks.
Yes, exactly. And know that, and have strength that the right opportunity is going to come to bear. I think notice when you're forcing something and notice when it actually is an added advantage for that person. So know when that person is going to be like, think about it and think of like, they're going to be like actually very excited that you reach out to them and you're going to be saving them time. And I think those are the better times than, you know, feeling like, the burden is on you to sell it. And you want to be as useful as possible and, just always maintain that perspective on it.
Okay. So one of the things that I've been starting to ask people that are business owners is what type of advice were you given? What's the best advice you've ever been given?
You know, I think it comes back to, I think a lot of the lessons I've learned as an entrepreneur has been some of how I felt in corporate and the things that I felt were missing and just from my energy, my environment, my soul. And I think I've made a very intentional, both Bo and I have made a very intentional effort to create an environment where, you know, a non-toxic environment where it's really honest and authentic. And so I think the best advice, honestly, really a lot to do with how we were raised and just treating people how you want to be treated. And I think for me, I didn't always find that when I was working in these corporate jobs. And I felt like, you know, the power dynamic was really, you know, very stressful. And I felt that as much as I would be giving that out, it wasn't always received back. So I think now that I'm in a situation where I have a little bit more control over it, I'm able to have more influence in that way because, we're like the pace setters and that we're setting the environment for our business and our environment. And I think it gives me more personal satisfaction now, whereas before it just felt kind of like it fell flat. So, I'd say like, you know, is a lot of the values that we were just raised in and I think bringing that to light. And I think finally we're in an environment where that is able to be replicated. And I, you know, it's an honor and a blessing to be able to interact with directly to people and consumers and clients and impact their lives in that way. Cause I see sadly how missing that is from the feedback. Cause so many people tell us that they, that they've never had an experience like that. And that, you know, part of me, it's encouraging, but part of me is also really disappointed. And I just feel like we have to do better, you know, like we just have to do better in how we're interacting with one another, whether that's, you know, customer service, you know, just client relationships and just person to person relationships. I just think we have to do better and really bring more humanity to situations. And so, you know, I'm just hopeful that, I'm hopeful that in creating unique experiences that the kind of pays it forward and inspires other people, you know, who are looking to be in business and interact with us. And they see, you know, they see that impact and want to bring similar, you know, a similar feel to it. Yeah. So that's probably the best advice I've given from my parents. And yeah.
Okay. And so what's some of the worst advice you've ever been given? That's usually the harder one.
I know. Some of the worst advice. I mean, I think, honestly, I think sometimes when people say, I think there's a certain instance of like where generationally, you know, there's this pressure to sort of keep plugging away and keep at it. And I think, you know, I remember starting out in my first job out of college, my first, I was in PR, I was at a PR agency, and I remember there being so much turnover and like people moving around, which was typical of that industry. But I think for like an older generation, they thought that was really kind of bizarre and weird. And I think as much as it can seem like kind of reactionary and everything, I think in this day and age, I think it's important to like know what you want. And sometimes you do have to try different areas. And I think it's important to pay attention to your intuition. So that whole, you know, stick with it. And, you know, I think you think about how much time we spend in our careers and our job. And I've always said, you know, life's too short. Like we're spending so much time in our jobs. You know, it's really important to pay attention to it. Don't be reactionary, but look at the pieces of the puzzle that are not working for you and be more aware of that so that you can change it. I don't think, I think right now in the fact that there's so many more people who are taking their work home and on their phone and are accessible for work, it's now had so much creep into our personal lives that you can't help but make sure that that's a priority and that you're getting what you need from it. And I think, you know, gone are the days where, it's a different workplace, it's a different job industry. And so I think you really actually have to be selfish and think about yourself and what you're getting out of it, because I think everybody's giving so much by virtue of just time. You know, I think we're just not in that regular 9-to-5. Even if you have a typical 9-to-5, it rarely ends up being that way this day and age. So I encourage people to pay attention to that thing in the pit of their stomach, because I don't think it goes away really, and you need to figure out a way to resolve that. So I say maybe that's kind of the worst advice I've been given, is just to like stay on course and plug away.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's really good. So who is your Black woman shout out for today?
My Black woman shout out is actually a young lady by the name of Naomi Wadler, who spoke at the march last weekend in DC. Oh. She's an 11-year-old that I actually know, her mother, and I know the family. And I was just, you know, it was so exciting to see that come over my feed. And I was actually not surprised whatsoever, because knowing her mother, knowing how she raised her daughters with so much intention and just awareness of their voice in this world, you know, I was just so proud. And seeing everybody like sharing memes and her trending, you know, it's just, it makes it very encouraging in this time. I think that's why everybody responded, because she was adding such a critical voice to such a tragic issue. Mm-hmm. That and to see it come from, you know, someone who's 11 years old, it just, you know, and so articulate and so on point. Yes. It made us all proud. So she's definitely my shout out. She's doing amazing work.
Yeah, that's a hell of a shout out. That little girl. Yeah. is phenomenal.
Yeah, phenomenal. At 11, I think it's great.
Yeah, I was nowhere near where she is at 11, so.
Yeah, I know, she's our inspiration. I love that. I mean, we can all inspire each other. It doesn't have to be about age, I think.
Exactly.
I think, yeah, so keep at it, you know? We can all keep at it.
Yeah, keep an eye on her. She's definitely of the future.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate you taking the, you know, a few minutes out of your day to talk to us. This conversation has been fantastic.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we were able to make this work, and thank you so much, because I know it's been a crazy few months, so I'm glad we were able to get this on the books, and I'm excited. We're excited to tune in and keep posted on what you guys are doing.
Yeah, me as well. All right, well, thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye. So let's talk a little bit about what happened with Universal FanCon. I feel like the world just blew up in the past like 3 or 4 days.
It really did. Before we talk about the dirty, let's talk about the great. And there's not a lot of great, but there is some great. And that is the community rallying around the talent that was incoming that can't, like, get their stuff, you know, can't just undo what's done. Like, merchandise has been shipped and setups have been shipped. And so, you know, a lot of people were scrambling, trying to figure out, you know, is there something we can do? Folks were looking at doing bar crawls. Folks were looking at maybe finding the space and having talent there to display their wares while we had some live podcast shows. And then Nerds of Color, along with, along with Black Heroes Matter, and a couple other groups, were able to find a space. So if this comes out before the 27th, which I hope it will.
Yeah.
And you had tickets to go to the Universal FanCon. The pop-up location is WakamaCon. It's going to be called WakamaCon. It's Saturday, April 29th. It's at 1100 Wacomico Street in Baltimore, Maryland. For details or contact, you want to send an email to info@thenerdsofcolor.org. So basically, if you were a vendor, if you were an artist, if you were a cosplayer who was set to show up, if you were an attendee who was planning to go, you can go to this event instead. And it's not the full weekend that you were promised. However, it is something. Additionally, the Greater Philly Comic Convention, which is the same weekend, caught wind of it and decided that if you have your tickets, you can come Friday and Sunday with your Universal FanCon badge and get access that way with your ticket. So you can get in that way and you know, recoup your weekend. Now, to get to Philadelphia, the easiest way to do it from Baltimore is to hit up Amtrak. To get on the Amtrak, you'll get there probably in about 90 minutes, if not less. So you'll have to do a little extra traveling, but you don't have to drive if you don't want to, and it's a way to kind of recoup your weekend. It's not the weekend you were promised, but it's something. So just reach out to those entities and get those details. Also, there's been some tumblers that are set up online for artists to put up their wares that they had planned to bring and maybe get that coverage and possibly sell some of their merchandise and things like that. So just keep an eye out on the different hashtags that have been trending that have been trying to help people who were greatly impacted by this kind of turn a weekend around as much as can be done. Yeah.
Okay, so let's just talk about what happened first so people know what's going on. So
the month of April just needs to be put in rice. That said, on, what was it, Friday morning. It was Friday morning, right?
Yep, Friday morning.
Friday morning, people were getting emails from the hotel.
Yep.
Saying that their reservations had been canceled, blah, blah, blah. And I think some of these people were attendees, and some of these people were vendors who had sent their merchandise there and had reserved space, like possibly storage space.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing had come out. And then people were online. I know Brandon, Shanna, and I were looking to get press credentials and have a panel. So we were assured press credentials, but we hadn't heard anything. And I had emailed, what was it, Tuesday, asking for follow-up, like, hey, I just need information about our press badges and where we picked those up, and also any details about the panel, if it was approved and where it's going to be. And they said, we'll get back to you on the panel, but give me the full names for your press badges, because Brandon and I were going to drive up and, like, cover Saturday. Okay, whatever, what have you. Well, I was going to cover Saturday. I don't know if he was going to go extra days, but I was definitely going to go cover Saturday. So then Friday morning, it was definitely Friday morning because something else happened on Thursday that I was dealing with that was also kind of wild. There's an announcement that goes out that says that the event has been postponed till further notice. There will be no ticket refunds. We'll get back to you. The website was taken down. All that's up there now, if you go to Universal FanCon, is a frequently asked questions that was being edited real time. They had 52 directors. If you want to hear more in-depth details about some of this, I would really encourage you to listen to Sanity Check. Justin from Three Fifths, they had a confirmed panel and he was on this past Saturday and they went more into depth, but they had like 52 people who were listed on this board of directors as, you know, directors. And it's like 52 people and none of you knew this.
Wait, so hold on. So when was it supposed to happen? It was supposed to happen next week, right?
The 27th through the 29th was the scheduled date. Yeah. They announced 7 days out. So there were people, I want to say from internet, you know, podcasts who were overseas. There was a gentleman from Japan who has his ticket. He's coming in from Japan. He can't undo it. He's just trapped. Some of the talent that we were working with to get press passes through there, and it was from, I want to say it was from one of the, it was from a major television show. Mm-hmm. Their talent is already coming in. So they were trying to figure out, okay, we're booked, we're blocked in, so we're coming. So let's figure out what we can do in the meantime. There are a lot of people impacted by this. This whole event started as a Kickstarter.
Yep.
2 years ago. And I didn't know this until last night. Their goal for the Kickstarter was $26,000. And I could have told them then, if I had known that, I would have emailed them like, y'all ain't doing a three-day convention on the East Coast in the DMV area for nobody's $26,000.
No.
Even though they raised $57,000, you still not doing a three-day convention on the East Coast in the DMV for $57,000.
Nope.
That's not even going to cover your venue and the essential staff that they're going to require that you have, like medical, like security. That's not going to cover your insurance. That's not going to cover the equipment requests and needs that you have, the stages, the mics, the AV equipment. That's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be lucky to get a half-day convention out of $57,000 on the East Coast.
Exactly. I don't know anywhere on the East Coast you can do that.
And not with the kind of names you were trying to draw.
Right. All right. Well, they raised $56,000. Then you got to think about how much the vendors added to it, because the vendors gave them money, I'm sure. So,
and that was the blow up. That was blow up number one. The frequently asked questions initially said, hey, you know, can we get our money back? No, but we'll honor it for the next con. You couldn't even do the first con. What next con? And you were not going
to
give me my money back, huh?
Yeah, you need
so that was the first thing. Then they kept changing the frequently asked questions real time. People were screenshotting it, and none of the frequently asked questions answered any questions or solved any problems. It was more deflection of responsibility. So that fueled the fire of people being pissed off. Then you go from there to people deactivating their Twitters and people looking up individuals that were on a board of directors that allegedly had part in other conventions that never came to fruition.
Yeah,
and it started to look like a scam. And like I said, personally, I don't believe that the people who were trying to put this together started out to try to scam anybody.
Right.
I think what happened was you had a lot of creatives with a lot of big ideas, but no one pumped the brakes to say, hey, we need some logistical folks who know what the hell they're doing, who know how to plan events on our team. Let's get them so we're doing this right. And you had 2 years to do it.
Yeah.
This isn't something you came up with in December. You've been working on this for 2 years. There is no reason that they couldn't have done this. And it might have been that they ran out of money, but it's like, then you adjust this, then say, we have to adjust the scale of our event. But then one of the co-founders, who now wants to claim that they are a member, and I'm not giving names, go look it up. It's all, trust me, you can find it. Is claiming that they did not know what was going on, but at the beginning of April, they realized that they were coming up short on money. I'm like, so you could have said something even as soon as then, or you could have shifted the scale of your event then.
But sweetness, that's a lie. They knew before April, because you plan so far in advance for everything that has to go down. I know that as a vendor. So they lying. They knew about this back in February, probably.
They had to have, because here's my thing. I planned our family reunion here in the D.C. area 2 years ago. And it was just here in the town I live in, which is in a suburb of DC. And I rented a room for 4 hours in a community center. And I had to put the deposit down. Our reunion was in July. I had to give them the deposit by mid-May. So that means if they knew they didn't have enough money for the venue, because it sounds like they didn't give the venue their money and the venue canceled them.
Yeah.
Which means they didn't pay their deposit, which would have been due, if that's April, it would have been due, like you said, in February.
Or before, because it's a huge venue. So they knew months ago. They just didn't tell anyone because they thought they could get around it somehow. But they knew. You can't put together something that big and not have the money in order 6 months to a year in advance. You just can't. That's not how that works. You know what I mean? And whenever you're a vendor, they're sending you letters, emails, they're asking for money. If it's an event that big, because I imagine it was going to be huge from the sound of it.
They were hoping it would be huge.
Well, you've got people coming from around the country.
Yeah, but I don't think they had that many in ticket sales. So in terms of vendors, they probably had a lot, but they didn't have a lot of people. Yeah. And therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
You're going to get some same days, but you need to budget based on your advanced ticket sales.
Yep.
And you need to pick a cutoff date for that. But my thing was this was your first convention. Why are you planning for a 3-day event for your first convention?
I probably should have done like a day event.
With no skills to pull off an event.
Mm-hmm.
What happened here tells me these people do not have the skill set to pull off a large scale event.
Right.
3 days should not have been your goal.
Yeah. It should have been a day.
Maybe a half day, maybe a full day event.
Yeah. Like a Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah. Do a Saturday. And it's really heartbreaking, too, because if you think about the purpose of this event, it was to give a voice to people who are typically shut out or voiceless in your Awesome Cons, in your San Diegos, in your Chicagos, in your New Yorks. People of color, marginalized individuals, for them to be centered and featured. And those are the people who put their heart and their soul and their Kickstarter dollars and their travel dollars and their time off into coming and supporting something that was supposed to be about them.
Yeah.
And now you've killed that goodwill.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you look at it too. Chris went off on Twitter.
Oh, Chris.
He went, and rightfully so, because think about it. When we did NegroCon, when we were doing all that planning, Chris was like, look, okay, we can maybe get 125 people, and that's including the people that we bring with us, so I'm going to go for this venue. And Rod and Karen's like, oh, baby, that seems slow. But Chris knew he had to put up his own money.
Yep.
Chris put up his own money as a deposit with no guarantee that he was going to get that money back.
Right.
Well, I don't know if it was his own money, but I know he put up money from the network. We could have came out as a loss. Fortunately, we sold it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe we broke even. And that's my thing. I think they expected to come out of this with a profit. I'm like, your first thing, your goal is to come as close to breaking even as you can. If you break even, glorious. If you come real close to breaking even better. But coming out with a profit, mm-mm. That wasn't going to happen.
Well, that's...
They didn't budget for that.
But that's like business 101. But hey, I just started my business doing my desserts. Mm-hmm. It's loss, gain. Loss, gain. Loss, gain. Loss. That's how it works when you first start out. And so if they're trying to get a profit their first year, then they really didn't know what they were doing. And they were probably... They probably brought in people they shouldn't have brought in. They probably paid people they shouldn't have paid. And they probably had a venue that was too big. Then they are asking vendors for probably absorbent amounts of money. Who paid it? But then once you get the vendors there, now you've got to get them the people that are going to be there, the traffic, you know, that's going
to
be there.
Make it worth their while.
Exactly. You have to guarantee them the traffic. Like I said, I just started doing vending events, and traffic is crucial. So if they've been, like, for instance, I imagine as a vendor, if you have like a 6-foot table, they're probably charging these people $3,000 for big events like that. If it's the kind of event that they're saying that it was going to be, it could be $3,000 easy. So you get this money from your vendors, but then you only have 2,000 people show up for the show. There's no way they're going to make that money back. because you don't have the traffic that needs to be there. And it's all about the traffic. And I feel for those vendors because so much goes into being a vendor for these events. I'm not talking about the podcasters, because podcasters would be screwed, right? But they already have their stuff.
We didn't pay. Like, right. I don't know that when we applied to be panels, we had to pay to be panels. There but you have to pay to be a vendor.
There you go. So that's why I'm not talking about, like, because it hurt all these people, podcasters, cosplayers, all these people. I absolutely agree.
The folks, like the vendors, the artists, even the people who had to order extra stuff, like if they were coming to sell stuff, or all that money. And then if they shipped it ahead of time, like, thank God that the hotel is working with them to get it back. But one of the co-founders who had deleted his Twitter came back today like, well, I'm working to get these people their stuff back. And they're like, no, you're not. The hotel is working with us because they're the ones who have our belongings. You ain't done shit. So,
yeah,
every statement that comes out, I'm like, y'all need a publicist and possibly a lawyer, because y'all might get sued.
Not possibly. They should be getting sued. They probably didn't have a class action.
Y'all PR, I don't think you had if you had a director for PR, they are doing a shit job, because they've been putting out statements that have been basically gaslighting attempts to absolve themselves of responsibility so they don't take the heat. I'm like, you have to take the heat. You have to take the heat. Like, we fucked up, and you have to be able to own that, because you did fuck up.
Yeah, I can't even imagine how much money those vendors lost. Because you have to think about it. They had to purchase a ticket to be a vendor. Then they had to purchase a ticket to get there. They had to pay for their hotel room. They have to get their food. They then have to get their product. All the things that involves getting their product, they have to package their product. They have to send their product.
If this isn't their full-time gig, they got to get time off.
Exactly. And then we're not even talking about their regular bills. This is just to make it to the con. So the amount of money that these people have lost, I can't even imagine. I'm devastated for them.
I am too. And everybody's like, well, y'all not getting your money back because it's postponed. I was like, no. No one's going to trust you again. It was one of those things like, well, will the same guests be there next year? And I posted because I was like, you know what? I wasn't going to say nothing until I saw y'all cutting up. So I would just here and there post little shit because I'm petty that way. You know that gift of that man in the red solo cup shaking his head and turning away like, I said, that's the only acceptable answer to that frequently asked question. Will these guests be there next year? If I was a guest, like a vendor or an artist or talent, ain't no way in hell any one of those 52 people's names could appear on something and I would agree to go. Yeah. There's no way.
There's a bit of goodwill that you extend when you're a vendor to go to these vending events. Let me give you an example. Last night I did a vending event, and I had been talking to this lady for weeks about this vending event, paid her, and then she gave me the flyer for the vending event that it was for last night. I did not know it was a burlesque vending event.
Oh.
I sell desserts. So,
well, treats and treats. No, I'm kidding.
Well, treats on top of treats. And look, I like titties like everyone else. Okay, that's cool. But you have to know that up front before you get to the event, so you know what to make. You need to know if that's going to be a good place for your business. And so, thinking about my experience last night, which was hilarious. Butts and brownies is what I should have called that event for myself. and thinking about what those people went through for, you know, Universal FanCon, where they extended their goodwill and they worked really hard to get, you know, everything done based on what they're being told, to find out 7 days before that it's canceled. It's unforgivable. You could never have another event underneath any of those person's names, underneath the name of Universal FanCon. You could never. Because no one's ever going to trust you to do that again. Nobody's ever going to buy a ticket. As a consumer, I wouldn't buy a ticket because, okay, those cons are usually pretty expensive. They usually run, $50 a ticket or so? Like,
Depending on the con. So, like, Awesome Con one day was, like, 40. Okay, the year I paid, because I haven't paid because I've gone for press the last couple of years. But the first year I paid, I went for Saturday. And that Saturday ticket just for me, and that wasn't VIP access, that was just to be able to walk through the door, mm-hmm. was $45.
Yeah, when I went to AwesomeCon, when I went to NegroCon with you guys, I paid for my own ticket. It mm-hmm. was $50 just to walk in the door.
And see, that year I went as press, so I didn't have to pay that year, and I didn't have to pay this year because I was press again. But mm-hmm. yeah, my first year, one day was $45. And that's not even VIP access, which gets you in the door earlier. That's not including mm-mm. autographs or signatures. People spend a lot of money to go to these things.
Yeah. Yeah, it was $50 just to get in. You still had to walk it. You still had to pay for things if you wanted. Like,
you had to eat.
You had to eat. And so I wouldn't, as a consumer, I wouldn't pay for a ticket. If I was a vendor, I would help. There's no way in fucking hell I'd buy something from any of them. But then also, this was supposed to be a diverse event. Mm-hmm. So you had what I'm assuming.
First of its kind.
First of its kind. It was supposed to be a lot of women and a lot of black women, I'm sure, who mm-hmm. were getting, who they thought were going to be able to get a voice out there for themselves. And you got to know that these other cons are watching what happened. And the way that they treat black people now, the way that they don't let them get their voices out now, why would they let them get it out in the future?
Well, and that's just it. I don't know that.
What evidence do you have?
I think it's going to be less about getting the talent to get in the door and more about people behind the scenes. So with these major cons, being able to diversify behind the scenes, that's where we're going to see the hit. Or people start trying to start up a new venture. It's like, you know, kind of like remember the Alamo, remember for Universal FanCon, which is why I'm kind of glad. And, you know, shameless plug, not shameless plug, because hell, we can plug ourselves. It's I'm glad we were able to have those so far two really successful events with NegroCon last summer, with the Black Panther screening this year, where, you know, people took a chance on us and came out and hung with us and they had a good time. And, you know, we're still getting inquiries like, okay, when are we doing it this summer? And it's like, hey, maybe we're in Atlanta this summer. We're trying to see how that works out, especially since AwesomeCon came so early this year. We couldn't do it this year here. But, you know, fortunately, we had started to build that goodwill because let's say we had tried to do NegroCon now.
Yeah.
Although I feel like we have, between us and Rod and Karen and, you know, Phenom over at Where's My 40 Acres and Justin and them over at Three Fifths, everybody that partnered with us on that, we have enough listeners that trust and believe in us that we've delivered for. That I think we could still be successful, but in terms of reaching new folks, there's still going to be that hesitancy.
Yeah.
Because they don't know us.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
So it could affect a lot of things. That was my point. Like, it affects way more than what happened at Universal FanCon. Like this.
Absolutely.
This has an effect and it reverberates to the entire industry. And it's really a shame. And I'm really happy that all of us are, you know, trying to pull our resources together to make sure that these people who there's no way they're ever going to be able to recruit what they could have got.
Right. Exactly. What they wouldn't have paid this money to get what they're getting, but the least we can do is try to help them get something.
Something. Yeah. Because, you know, you have your goal as a vendor, you know, you've paid, let's say you paid $100 to go to an event. Your goal is to make at least $300 or more because then you would have made your money back. So they all have their goals. Mm-hmm. And even though they're not going to probably get to the goal that they want, the fact that everybody is trying to pool around them to lift them up, it's got to have some sort of effect, I hope. And also, let me say this now. I put out a word for any woman that is an entrepreneur. Either way, I would love to have you on the show. But most definitely women that were affected by what happened at Universal FanCon, hit me up. And what I would do, what me and Chris talked about, is just putting out maybe a 20 or 30-minute conversation about what it is you offer so that we can signal boost anything that you have available for sale, or if you have a pop-up somewhere, let me know, and I'm more than happy to get you on the mic, because the more people that hear you, the better off you'll be. So I really do hope that these people are able to at least recoup their costs, even if they're not able to make a profit. I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do hope so. So, and I know that there is a lot of mess that's going on with Universal FanCon. It's just unfortunate. Like, the whole situation is just
messy
and detrimental. So I don't know, it just makes me kind of speechless.
I'm in shock. No, I'm not in shock. I'm just like, I'm deeply disappointed.
I'm in disappointment about the way things were handled. I'm just very disappointed. And I really do hope that, you know, it gets resolved the best way it can and that those people get their money back.
I really need, though, the folks that... One of them, his name's Robert. The other one, Jamie, they keep putting out these statements, but the statements aren't answering the questions that need to be answered. So I'm like, you know what? The more you put out a statement that is about saving your face as opposed to resolving the issue, the angrier people are going to get. What you need to do is stop putting out statements. You guys need to get together, sit down, figure out if you can get these people's money back, if not all of it, some of it, if so, how. And then come out with a statement that has nothing to do with, well, I didn't mean to, and I didn't know, and not, okay, here's where we fucked up, here's how we're going to make it right, here's who you call to get this back, here's who you call to get that back, here's who you call for blah, blah, blah. They don't need to be putting out any statements that's not answering those questions. Because all of these, well, I'm being threatened, and my life's being threatened, and I didn't know, and they didn't tell me about the money. It's just, so basically, you took everybody's money and then didn't know where it went? That is infuriating people. Stop it. Stop putting out these statements that's trying to absolve you of your own responsibility. Your name is on it. You are responsible.
Just take the responsibility for it.
Yes, just own it.
Yeah, just if that isn't a business or a life lesson that people should be learning from what's happening with Universal FanCon, just accept when you're wrong. Because that goes a long way. It doesn't fix it. Doesn't put money back in my pocket, but it definitely would make people feel a whole lot better if you would just say, you know what, we fucked up, we didn't realize how much money it was going to actually cost right here, we were not prepared, and we want to give you all of your money back and hope that you'll come back to us the next year and maybe build something small.
And here's how we plan to get you your money back, and here's the timeline we anticipate. Like, I would argue, don't even the explanation at this point in the game, by day three, it's too late for an explanation. How am I getting my money back and when am I getting it back? That's what you need to come with at this point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if they would just apologize and let people know when they're getting their money back or just give people their money back, that mm-hmm. would go a long way in absolving themselves of this anger. It's like a building anger that people have right now with the people behind Universal FanCon.
Absolutely.
And it's people that are angry that weren't even involved with Universal FanCon, but they're angry from the sidelines.
They're angry from the sidelines in part because they've had, I'll describe them as disturbing dealings with some of the creators and co-founders and directors. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's like, it's not a pile on, but it's like, I've been telling y'all for years, this was a problem, and now it's blown up. See why you wouldn't listen to me? This is a problem, and I'm going to warn you how this is going to play because this is my experience, so be forewarned. Here's what you went for. It's not going to be transparent. It's going to be some bullshit. There's going to be some gaslighting. That's what I'm seeing.
Yep. Yeah, that's, like I said, apologizing, giving people their money back will go a long way.
Yeah.
Because if you think you're going to get out of this by postponing it and not giving people their money back, think again.
You postpone something, you have the money to pay and reschedule. They don't have the money to reschedule nothing.
Also, what hotel is going to trust them again? What venue is going to trust them again?
Oh, it's not about that. Like, if a venue don't get their money, they just cancel the reservation. They're not out anything. As long as you come with the money, they'll let you reserve.
My point is, if you didn't pay your deposit to begin with, like what it sounds like must have happened is that they didn't get their deposit. Mm-hmm. If you didn't pay your deposit to begin with, what next venue is going to say you can schedule anything without a deposit first?
Like, I don't know. They'll have to put the money up front.
Yeah, like your name is mud is what I'm trying to say. And so,
and usually for a big event like that, you have to put, I believe you got to put like 25% down.
Yeah.
So when I, and I, mine was, like I said, my reunion wasn't a big event. There, you know, it was about 40 or 50 of us. I had to put down 10% when I made the reservation, and then I could make payments towards the rest of the deposit. I had to put down 10%, and then I can make payments towards the full payment, but then the full payment was due 2 months prior to the event.
Exactly. So that's my point. Like, their name is MUD. Like, you would have to pay
it in full. It might ask for 50% up front, yeah, and it might be non-refundable.
Non-refundable, and you have to pay that full bill, you know, probably earlier than you would if you hadn't have done this event. You know what I mean? Like, it's just much harder for yourself, and it may be harder for other people to be able to do things, too, now.
Yeah.
You know? And they always, I don't know.
It's a mess.
It's a huge mess. And I hope that it gets resolved positively. So.
But given the way they're on day three on Twitter, they're still trying to absolve themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't see it being resolved positively.
Yeah.
It's going to be resolved bitterly, I believe.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, and you don't want that.
No.
You don't want that. And if it's people that are, some of the people that are behind this Universal Podcast Con or Universal Con, if there are people behind that have things like podcasts or anything of the sort, just kiss all that away if you don't resolve this positively. It's never, get some of it away
because there are some people that are coming through like, well, don't blame this person. I'm like, why not? Their name is on it.
I don't know. What I mean is, it's harder for you. It's not going to be easy for you to have the same type of environment as a podcaster if you're behind that.
Yeah.
So your audience is now, you know, an audience that once was looking forward to you doing something. Some of them are going to be bitter. Some of them are going to be asking you questions. You're never going to be able to have the type of discussions that you had before. Like, it's a different type of crowd or group of people that you're going to have following you. The only way that you have a podcast is because people want to hear what you have to say. So yeah, if you're behind it and you have any type of relationship with the public like that, you've got to resolve this positively or it's going to definitely impact your business.
Well, what I can say from what I'm seeing them do on Twitter, it's going to impact their business because they are not handling this well at all. Yeah. And they don't have anybody in their corner to grip them up like, okay, stop talking until we can figure this out.
Right? They definitely need that person. Just shut up and stop putting out these frequently asked questions. Stop it.
Yeah, because they ain't answering nothing.
No, just making it worse.
Frequently asked questions are designed to provide solutions. These are not that.
Exactly. I wish everyone the best with that.
Yeah, I mean, folks that are coming, like I said, check out the event on Saturday. Hit that email up for more details in terms of start dates and how to gain access. And to, you know, because that's just it. We didn't even get our press information sent out. So I don't know what's been printed. I don't know if badges were sent out ahead of time. So it's a matter of how do you prove that you were a part of this event? That's the other thing. Like, so Philly is extending that offer, but I just realized if they didn't send out badges, if they were just expected to pick their stuff up on site.
Ouch.
You see what I mean? Holy shit. I didn't even think about that.
Well, maybe they can just bring their receipt.
Yeah. I mean, they have their receipt. So I'm guessing that Philly is monitoring. If they made that offer, they probably know that that's a possibility and have a contingency to say, hey, I know you were supposed to be at this event, so let me see this. Okay, you're in. But shit, Jesus Christ, this is a mess.
That's a big mess. It's a very big mess. And it's unfortunate that it was for this type of event that it was a mess.
Mm-mm-mm.
So, all right, well, let's wrap things up positively. Excuse me, I just got a coughing fit there. Who's your Black woman shout out this week?
I have three.
Oh, all right, let's do this. Come on.
My first is Leslie Mack from the Interracial John podcast.
Oh, wow.
I've been listening to her since I've heard them on Rod and Karen, and I just think she's good people, and she does a lot of work that I would deem intense, traumatic, but necessary with her activism and her organizing and her attempts to just make the world better for our community. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that she always hears often enough how much the work that she's willing to do that a lot of us are incapable of doing is appreciated. So I just wanted to send a shout out her way to let her know that even if we don't always say it out loud, we see it, we love you, and we appreciate all that you do on behalf of us. Even when it seems thankless, and even when you're tired, you are appreciated and being thought of and loved. So that's my first one.
Wow. Let me add to that. Leslie is one of my heroes. And when I started podcasting, she was one of the people that I kind of molded myself after. Her, Karen, Nina, the ladies that I hear and I relate to, and I see how hard they work and I see how hard they grind. And I'm always fascinated by it. Those are the ladies that I kind of try to mold myself after when I started this game because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So yeah, Leslie is a force to be reckoned with, and the work that she does is phenomenal and can't be done by many. And so I definitely treasure her as a person, for real. Shout out to you, Leslie.
Absolutely. And then my second and third, because they're basically my baby, so I'm just going to group them together, are Shanna and Asia Rowe. Asia Rowe contributes to Project Fandom. She's a good friend. She's over in the UK. Those are my little sisters. I love them dearly. We talk daily, and I just we talk through so much stuff, and they are just like my little sister circle, even though we're thousands of miles apart and an ocean apart for one of us. It doesn't feel like it because we're in touch every day, and that support has been invaluable with the last several months that I've been dealing with personal family issues and medical issues. So I want to give them a shout out and say thank you, ladies. Love you.
Yeah, I love the Black Woman shout out. Always puts a smile on my face. My Black Woman shout out is Maria Seitz from Cupcake Mafia, which is a t-shirt business. The reason why I wanted to do a Black Woman shout out to her is because it's funny too, because I picked her before this whole Universal FanCon thing popped off, but she was able to bring herself back from the brink of failure. And you know, failure is usually the first step to winning. But a lot of people aren't willing to go through failure because usually for people, when they fail, that's it. And for her, she built a $2 million business. She was able to get a contract through Forever 21. Mm-hmm. When she did that, she became part of a board instead of actually owning the business.
Okay.
And the board fired her.
What?
Yeah. The board fired her from her own business that she built. And she was able to come back from failure to buy that business back.
All right. Get your best revenge is your pay. Forget them, girl. Yes.
Right. And so a woman like that is super inspiring to me because, you know, with my daily failures as a business owner, it's inspiring to see someone that said, well, I failed here, but fuck it, I'm going to keep pressing until I get back what I want. So yeah, shout out to her for real. That's it. And I love hearing stories like that. So if anyone has a story like that or knows a woman like that, or if you are an entrepreneur yourself, please let me know. I would love to have you on the show. Ma'am, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about before we hung up today?
Oh, that's it. Thank you for having me.
Of course, Bill. Come on now. Stop it. Come on here whenever you want.
Girl, I ain't nobody. What you talking about?
Shut the hell up. Yes, you are. You're a big part of MTR. And honestly, you were the person I came to first when I wanted to do DocuDrunks and talked me off of the ledge when I decided to do this show. So shut up. Yes, you are. Don't do that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Discount yourself. Don't do that. You know, I'm not going to let you do that, ma'am. Thank you. So anyways, thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the show. I'm on all of the channels, iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, any of the podcast apps that you're looking for. You'll be able to find me. The show is the one with the head wrap and the edges out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I will say, because this came up when you put that call out for people who maybe wanted to get signal boost after the Universal FanCon fell apart.
Yeah.
I guess there's an app that we don't appear in, and that's fine. If you go to our website, mtrnetwork.net, you can grab our RSS feed and plug it into your preferred podcast device or podcast app and get us that way as well. So even if you don't see us in your feed, you can use the RSS line to pull us in.
Wait, which podcast app is that?
Oh, girl, I don't know. Guy tweeted us saying, I don't know where I can't find y'all in the best podcast app. I was like, here, go get this link here.
Yeah.
I forgot just who that quick. And, you know, that's not, that, no offense taken, but my mind, I'm getting old and my mind is scrambled. I don't remember
what it was. It doesn't matter. If you don't see us there, you know, MTR Network or Secret Sauce there, then yeah, she's right. Go to the website and click on the RSS feed and you'll be able to do it that way. Mm-hmm. That's how I do all my premium shows, so.
Same.
Yeah, so that will work just fine. Anyways, girl, thanks for hanging out with me.
For sure.
It's been fun, and yes. You guys all have a great week, okay?
Bye.
Bye.